from WCMU Public Media, this is Between the Lakes, a weekly recap of the top news stories impacting Central and Northern Michigan. I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Coming up on the show, the federal government has released new rules controlling how farmers can use the controversial herbicide dicamba.
We have to have every tool in the toolbox. Weeds are not getting easier to kill.
Will the new rules solve the problem of dicamba drift? And this week's Brain Teaser features one hot topic that happened this weekend a long time ago. We'll get to it after these headlines. Governor Gretchen Whitmer has declared a state of emergency for Antrim, Sheboygan, and Emmett counties following extreme rainfall in late June. This marks her fifth emergency declaration this year. The declaration deploys additional state resources to clean up and access damage. And according to the state's transportation department, around 6 inches of rain rapidly fell on June 29th, causing significant erosion to three major highways across the region. Whitmer says state and federal funding may be pursued based on damage assessments, but the transportation department says it'll be a while before those are complete. The U.S. Department of Justice plans to send election monitors to Detroit, Lansing, and East Lansing to keep tabs on the August primaries. Those cities are Democratic strongholds. It is not unusual for the federal government to use election monitors at polling locations in selected cities. Michigan Republican Party Chair Jim Runstead says showing up during a primary election can be good practice for the general election.
The stupid thing would be, okay, let's wait a week or two before the general election and let's start putting our processes in place. It's the proper way to do stuff. You pilot all kinds of things in either a special or primary election when your big concern is the general election.
Attorney General Dana Nessel and Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson say they welcome eyes on election processes, but stand ready to push back against any efforts to interfere with voting or orderly counting of ballots. Early in-person voting for the primary began in some communities this week. A jury in Mecosta County found a conservation officer not guilty for charges related to a 2023 shooting incident. WCMU's Emma George Griffin has the details.
Department of Natural Resources officer Ryan Cox was off duty at a campsite when he checked in on another camper in distress. The situation escalated, and the camper allegedly began attacking someone when Cox decided to shoot him. The camper survived and sued Cox for $250 million. A jury unanimously found the officer not guilty for assault with the intent to do great bodily harm. Ben Hall is the officer's attorney.
When Ryan used force, he did so believing that that was the only option he had to prevent the significant harm to somebody else.
The camper's attorney has not yet responded for comment on the case, but they filed a separate lawsuit at the federal level claiming Cox used excessive force. I'm Emma George Griffin, WCMU News.
And the Mackinac Bridge is at low risk of collapsing if a ship runs into one of its piers. That's according to the results of a new survey commissioned by the Bridge Authority. It comes after Maryland's Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed when a container ship sailed into it in 2024 and 6 people died. The analysis surveyed the design and structural integrity of the bridge connecting the peninsulas. It also considered the size of vessels that typically sail around it. Kim Nowak is the Mackinac Bridge's director. She says what happened to the Francis Scott Key Bridge is unlikely to happen here.
We don't see that same kind of vessel traffic. We don't see those large container ships here. Our vessels are smaller, and our opening underneath the shipping channel is huge. It's a 3,000-foot opening.
68 bridges across 19 states were also asked by federal officials to conduct similar studies. My Michigan Health is continuing to grow in central and northern Michigan. They broke ground this week on a new clinic for outpatient services in Standish. WCMU's A.J. Jones has more.
My Michigan will invest $12 million into the facility, which is slated to open in 2027. The 20,000-square-foot clinic will offer geriatric psychiatry and physical therapy, among other services. Michael Erickson is with My Michigan Health. He says recent federal health care changes are creating new challenges, but they are prepared.
We've had our different ups and downs with the different legislative initiatives over the years, and I think we've proven that we know how to adjust to that and to be able to be sustainable for our communities.
My Michigan acquired 4 facilities from Ascension across the region back in 2024. More recently, they spent $40 million to expand services in Clare. Reporting from Standish, I'm A.J. Jones, WCMU News.
And this year's National Cherry Festival in Traverse City is bringing back old community events and fun competitions for its 100th anniversary. One of the events is a homemade boat race called the Milk Carton Boat Regatta, which took place in Grand Traverse Bay this week. The race began in 1973, but hasn't been a part of the festival since the 90s. The boats are usually made of milk jugs, tape, and PVC pipes and can hold up to four people. Brett Fedorenchik is the event coordinator. He says he was shocked by the participants' performance.
We didn't have a sinking this year, and typically there's always been a dramatic sinking.
Fedorenchik says he hopes to get the event approved for next year. Bed racing is another event being brought back to the festival. And now it's time for this week's Brain Teaser. I'll pull from a hat either a random fun fact, a riddle, or a quiz question, all meant to tease your brain this weekend. So let's draw. Today's question asks, on July 11, 1911, what two lumber towns in Michigan vanished in a single afternoon? Again, on July 11, 1911, what two lumber towns in Michigan vanished in a single afternoon? Well, don't disappear just yet. We'll reveal the answer right after this. The Environmental Protection Agency released new rules regulating the controversial herbicide dicamba earlier this year. While it can be an effective tool for farmers to control weeds, it can also drift in the wind and kill other plants. As Harvest Public Media's Will Bauer reports, experts don't expect the new rules to solve all the underlying issues with dicamba.
On Kevin Johnson's farm in eastern Illinois near the Indiana border, weeds can be a really big issue. He and his family grow corn and soybeans, and they care a lot about the soil. Instead of tilling the field to kill weeds, Johnson relies on a mixture of herbicides, including dicamba.
We have to have every tool in the toolbox. Weeds are not getting easier to kill.
Dicamba is a potent weed killer, but the problem with this herbicide is that some crops are extremely sensitive to it. Grapes, tomatoes, and some trees can all be killed. Even soybeans and cotton that have not been genetically modified are at risk. Dicamba can drift in the wind, and after it's been sprayed above a certain temperature, it can vaporize and travel for miles. Aaron Hager is a weed science professor at the University of Illinois.
It's never really a question about if we'll see the symptomology of off-target movement. We just don't know how extensive it'll be because we can't really predict what the temperature is going to be.
And that's why Hager says dicamba can be such a contentious topic, even among farmers.
You know, the dicamba mindset among end users or non-end users was like the 2016 presidential election. You were in one camp or the other, and if you weren't in my camp, you were wrong.
The EPA calls the new regulations for spraying dicamba on cotton and soybeans the strongest ever. Hager says in some ways they are stricter. For example, they don't allow dicamba to be sprayed if it's hotter than 95 degrees. But the EPA also dropped rules that prevented it from being applied after June. Purdue University weed scientist Tommy Butts says farmers need to control weeds, but he has mixed feelings about dicamba.
We have to do certain strategies to reduce drift, which are really important, but then that's also shooting our weed control in the foot, and so we're losing here too. So that's why I say I always have a love-hate relationship with it right now, because we're stuck in the middle with a lot of balancing acts, and there's no good answer across the board.
Even outside the agricultural community, dicamba can be a problem. In some rural towns, the signs of dicamba drift are apparent if you know where to look.
Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
In a public park in Tilden, Illinois, Kim Ernt-Pitcher has noticed the leaves on the bur oak trees are curled and cupped around the edges.
They're also just misshapen. You can see that even some of the tips are folded and some of them are severely stunted.
Ernt-Pitcher is the director of Ecological Health for Prairie Rivers Network, a conservation nonprofit. She's been documenting drift damage across Illinois for 9 years now. She says dicamba stresses trees and even kills others. Previous iterations of the EPA rules called labels have been shot down in federal court, and Ernt-Pitcher doesn't expect these new rules to break the cycle.
Over and over, the courts have dealt with this issue, and we've had extremely technical, long labels to follow, and it's still causing injury, and it's really frustrating to see it come back.
Back on the farm in eastern Illinois, Johnson says he's sympathetic to those with concerns about dicamba. He and his neighbors plant dicamba-resistant soybeans in adjacent fields to avoid drift problems. To him, the key comes down to communication.
And I think we're getting better to that. But up until that point, I don't think everybody was having a conversation. We wave at each other, stuff like that, as neighbors, but you got to have those conversations. Now, nobody loves those conversations, but you got to have those conversations.
Johnson says he wishes there was a better chemical to use, but for now, they have to work with what they have. I'm Will Bauer, Harvest Public Media.
And Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains, including WCMU. And now it's time to reveal the answer to this week's Brain Teaser. To recap, we asked, on July 11, 1911, what two lumber towns in Michigan vanished in a single afternoon? Again, on July 11, 1911, what two lumber towns in Michigan vanished in a single afternoon? And the answer is Ausable and Oscoda. We would have also accepted the city of Alpena, who was also devastated in that same fire of 1911, but Oscoda and Ausable were leveled by the fire, driven by wind and sparked by dry conditions. The uncontrollable fires forced residents to jump into Lake Huron or onto a steamer boat in the lake to safely escape the blaze. Afterwards, Ausable was never rebuilt and many people moved from the area, but Oscoda was rebuilt and stayed the town it is today. And if you got this week's Brain Teaser right, we can officially say you are fire. That's all for this edition of Between the Lakes. Don't forget to subscribe to the Between the Lakes newsletter linked in the show notes, where you'll find more of our reporting and analysis from across the region. Visit our website, WCMU.org, to find out how to listen to your local WCMU radio station. This podcast is produced in part by the members of NABIT Local 412. It was edited and mixed by Rick Brewer. Our theme music comes from Gabe Shaw. Mike Horace is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Enjoy your weekend.